Welcome back, Hemming listeners, to the Hemingway List podcast, the podcast of greatness, book one, chapter 22, part one. Respect to Julian for keeping it Jenny from the block. Lexi109 said, I like the line where Stundhole, slash the narrator, says even he doesn't like Julian. I think it's pretty important as a writer to make the distinction that it's the narrator saying that, not Stendhal. You know, because we can't always just think a narrator, and the narrator is a character that the author puts on to tell the story. That's how I look at a narrator anyway. And it is frustrating for me when people think everything that the narrator mentions or thinks is what I think. So just from my own soapbox, I would say, yeah, I would say it's the narrator saying they don't like Julian. And that doesn't necessarily mean anything about Stendhal. But I could be wrong. I could definitely be wrong. Non-creative handle said, I thought it was funny that this line came out in the same chapter where Julian was not the most annoying character. Swim said, the mum fishy said, the epigraph, this quote is more commonly attributed to Talleyrand. However, considering the Jesuit references, it makes sense that Stendhal gives the attribution to Maladriga, a Jesuit. Maladriga was a Jesuit missionary in Brazil for 3 years. He returned to Europe in 1755 to assist after the Lisbon earthquake. Later, he was accused of plotting to assassinate the King of Portugal and was burned at the stake. 1761. This guy is pretty obscure. He doesn't even have a Wikipedia entry. Well, thank you for the research. Non-creative handle also said, I can't tell if Julian is becoming more likable or we're just getting insight into how unlikable the rest of the group is. That Julian has become the lesser of two evils. That lunch sounded horrible. Surrounded by people who undoubtedly all hate each other and are pretending to be friends, but worst of all, to basically be the hired entertainment for the evening. Those Renals are looking better and better. Altric, you know, I thought he kind of seemed to love having the chance to do his little monkey trip. Monkey, what is it? Dancing monkey trick to recite the Bible. Altric said, I know this was brought up a while ago, but I'm wondering if the general consensus has changed at all. Is Julian starting to love Madame de Renal genuinely? I think he might be. More genuinely, but not completely. The first sentence of the chapter was noteworthy to me in this regard. He'd barely reached Verrières when Julian reproached himself for being unfair to Madame de Renal. He basically feels bad for being mean to her rather than concocting ways to be artificially mean to her or bend her to his will. He praises actual qualities of her behaviour rather than just how pretty she is or how good she smells. I know that people have commented that Julian seems quite intrigued by her manner and schemes in recent chapters. Are they enough to shift his feelings of her into actual affection or regard her as a person? Also, this made me laugh out loud. Only a few days earlier, all he had thought of was the best way to beat him with a stick, but in such a way that it would not become a matter for criminal prosecution. And then I read it to my husband, who deadpanned, been there. Jeez. All right, very cool. Is he starting to actually like Madame de Renal? That's the question, isn't it? Okay, let's keep reading. I'm just going to go straight in and keep reading tonight. Make it a nice quick podcast because I do have a bloody headache, which is annoying me to no end. So, here we go. This is the second half of chapter 22. It was Madame de Renal who had come to visit to town on a visit, and who, leaving her children busy with a favourite rabbit who was travelling with them and running up the stairs four at a time, had arrived in Julian's room an instant before they did. The moment was delicious, but very brief. Madame de Renal had disappeared by the time the children came in with their rabbit, whom they wanted to introduce to their friend. Julian warmly greeted all of them, even the rabbit. He seemed to have found his family once more. He felt that he loved these children, that he loved to chatter with them. He was struck by the softness of their voices, by the naturalness and nobility of their little ways. He had the need to cleanse his imagination of all the vulgar mannerisms, all the disagreeable thoughts in which he existed in Verrières. There it was, perpetually fear of failure, always opulence and misery, grabbing at one another's hair. The people with whom he had dined would make confessions in the middle of talking about their roast that were humiliating to them and nauseating to those that heard them. You aristocrats, you're right to be proud, he said to Madame de Renal, and he told her of all the dinners he had been subjected to. Then you're quite the fashion, she laughed wholeheartedly, thinking of the rouge Madame Valenod thought herself obliged to put on every time she expected Julian. I believe she has designs on your heart, she added. The lunch was delightful. The presence of the children, however constricting it might have appeared, in fact increased their mutual happiness. These poor children could not sufficiently express their joy at seeing Julian again. The servants had not failed to inform them that he had been offered 200 francs extra to acculturate the little Valenods. In the middle of the meal, Stanislav Xavier, still pale from his grave illness, suddenly asked his mother how much his silver knife and fork and the goblet from which he was drinking were worth. Why do you ask? I want to sell them and give the money to Mr. Monsieur Julian so that he won't be a dupe for staying with us. Julian hugged him, tears in his eyes. His mother wept openly, while Julian, who had taken Stanislav on to his knee, explained to him that one shouldn't use the word dupe in this way. It was lackey's talk. Seeing the pleasure this gave Madame de Renal, he tried to explain with vivid examples that amused the children what it was to be a dupe. I see, said Stanislav. It's the crow who's fool enough to drop his cheese to be grabbed by the fox who's flattered him. Exhilarated with happiness, Madame de Renal covered her children with kisses, which she could hardly do without supporting herself on Julian a little. All of a sudden the door opened. It was Monsieur de Renal. His severe and disgruntled face made a queer contrast to the gentle merrymaking that his presence chased away. Madame de Renal went pale. She felt herself not in a state to deny anything. Julian launched into speech and, talking very loudly, began to tell Monsieur the mayor the incident of the silver goblet that Stanislav wanted to sell. He was sure the story would be ill-received. From the first, Monsieur de Renal frowned at the very word silver. Out of habit, the mention of that metal, he would say, is always the prelude to some demand being made on my purse. But here it was not only silver that concerned him. His suspicions had been aggravated. The happy spirit that animated his family when he was away was not calculated to soothe a man ruled by so ticklish a vanity. When his wife spoke in praise of the graceful and ingenious way in which Julian conveyed new ideas to his pupils, Yes, I know he makes me seem disagreeable to my own children. It's easy for him to be 100 times more lovable than I am, who in the end am the master. In these days everything tends to throw discredit on legitimate authority. Poor France. Madame de Renal did not pause in the slightest to examine the finer points of her husband's manner to her. She had just seen the possibility of spending 12 hours with Julian. She had a multitude of little purchases to make in town, and declared that she absolutely must dine in a chop house, whatever her husband might say or do. She stuck to her idea. The children were enchanted at the very word chop house, which conventional modern delicacy pronounces with such relish. Madame de Renal left his wife in the first dress shop she went into. He had to go and pay some calls. He returned, even more morose than he had been in the morning. He was convinced that the whole town was thinking about Julian and himself. In truth, nobody had yet given him a hint of anything offensive in public gossip. What had been repeated to Monsieur the Mayor had been solely concerned with knowing whether Julian would stay with him at 600 francs or accept the 800 offered by the Monsieur the Director of the poorhouse. The said director, meeting Monsieur de Renal socially, gave him the cold shoulder. This behaviour wasn't just stupid. In the provinces there is little thoughtlessness. Feelings are so rare that they are made to flow underground. Monsieur Valenod was what one calls 100 leagues from Paris, a loudmouth, that is, a type naturally insolent and coarse. His triumphant career since 1815 had confirmed his beautiful disposition. In Verrières he reigned, so to speak, under Monsieur de Renal's orders, but being much more active, blushing and at nothing, mixing himself up in everything, ceaselessly bustling about, writing, talking, overlooking humiliations, making no claim to personal dignity, he had ended up rivaling the influence of his master in the eyes of the church authorities. Monsieur Valenod had in effect said to the food suppliers, "Give me the two most stupid among you." To the lawyers, "Show me the two who know the least." To the medical officers, "Point out two charlatans." When we had assembled the most shameless examples of each profession, he had said to them, "Let's rule together." The manners of these people pained Monsieur de Renal. Valenod's coarseness was proof against everything, even being called a liar in public by the little abbe Mazon. Nevertheless, in the midst of this prosperity, Monsieur Valenod felt the need to shore himself up against the gross truths he knew only too well everyone had a right to charge him with, by little shows of insolence in petty matters. His activity had redoubled as a result of the anxieties left by Monsieur Appert's visit. He had made three journeys to Besançon. He wrote several letters by each courier. He sent others by anonymous messengers who passed by his house at nightfall. Perhaps he had made a mistake in getting the old curé Chaland dismissed, for this vindictive proceeding had caused him to be regarded by many pious women of good birth as a deeply wicked man. And services rendered on that occasion had put him in a state of absolute dependency on the vicar general, Monsieur de Frilair, from whom he was receiving strange commissions. This was the stage his conduct of affairs had reached when he gave way to the temptation to write an anonymous letter. To crown his embarrassment, his wife had declared to him that she wanted to have Julian in her house. Her vanity was smitten by the idea. In this situation, Monsieur Valenod foresaw a crisis in relations with his old ally, Monsieur de Renal. The latter might give him some hard words. That wouldn't matter. But he would also write to Besançon and even to Paris. Some minister's cousin might suddenly descend on Verrières and grab the poor house. Monsieur Valenod thought of making an agreement with the Liberals. That was why several of them had been invited to lunch, at which Julien had performed his recitation. They could give him powerful support against the mayor, but the elections would come along, and it was all too obvious that the poor house and the unfavourable vote did not go together. The story of these machinations, very well understood by Madame de Renal, was not to Julien, while he gave her his arm in strolling from one shop to another, and it had gradually taken them to Loyalty Promenade, where they spent several hours in almost as much tranquillity as if they had been at Vergy. Meanwhile, Monsieur Valenod tried to put off the crisis with his old patron by adopting a bold front towards him. That day, the ploy succeeded, but it increased the mayor's ill temper. Never had a man's vanity at odds with all that is harshest and most shoddy in petty money-grubbing produced so wretched a state as that in which Monsieur de Renal found himself when entering the chop house. Never by contrast had his children been so gay and so joyous. The comparison crowned his irritation. "I'm not wanted in my own family, I can see that," he declared, as he entered, in a tone he strove to make imposing. For all her reply, his wife took him aside and expounded to him the necessity of getting rid of Julien. The hours of happiness she had just had with him had lent her the ease and confidence needed to follow the plan of action she had been thinking about for the past fortnight. What really upset the poor mayor of Verrières at the deepest level was that he was aware that people joked publicly about his fondness for the ready. Monsieur Valenod was as generous as a thief, while he had shown more prudence than ostentation in the last five or six collections for the Brotherhood of St. Joseph, for the Congregation of the Virgin, for the Congregation of the Holy Sacrament, etc., etc. Amongst the gentry of Verrières and its environs, as adroitly classified in the records of the collecting brethren, and ordered according to the amount of the offering, Monsieur de Renal names. Monsieur de Renal's name had more than once been so seen to occupy the bottom line. It was in vain for him to plead that he earned nothing. On this matter, the clergy do not appreciate pleasantries. All right, there we go. I think that was a chapter of The Red and the Black. I wasn't really paying attention, but hopefully you were. Have your say at the subreddit, and I'll see you tomorrow.